Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central podcast. It is Friday, November 15th, 2019. My name is Daniel Bader, and I'm very, very excited and pleased and delighted to be joined by Miriam Jouar, Tank Girl, and overall expert, mobile journalist, been around forever. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Wow, what an intro, Daniel. I was like, okay.
I'm trying to fix my pop filter while I'm also introducing you, and it went off the rails, literally and figuratively. How are you? We were just in LA, and now I'm back in the cold East Coast weather. Where are you right now?
I'm in San Francisco. It's about the same weather as you left in LA. It's been a whirlwind of a week. I have so much on my plate right now. I'm sure you do too. It's like I thought that Techtober, Techvember phone apocalypse would be over by now, but I'm still feeling the echoes of it. I have so many videos to edit and stories to write. Ugh, yes.
Echoes is a good way to put it. Yeah, it feels like it just reverberates, like,
correct.
Everything we do, just there's never a finish line in sight.
Yep.
That is the reality of working in tech today. So we're going to focus today on one product, one announcement, one thing. And that thing is the brand new nostalgia-filled Motorola Razr. It was announced on late on Wednesday night. In LA at a very chic, posh, crazy, weird event. It headlined Diplo. That's kind of the
thing. Were you there for the actual party part, or like were you just there for the briefing with me?
Yeah, no, I was there for the party part.
I left before that.
And I'm glad you weren't there for that, because it was
I knew what I was going to get into there. I'm not here to be a pain, but you know how I always say it how it is, and I just feel like Moto really didn't do a very good job with this whole event. But the phone, however,
is a different thing altogether. So let's go back to 2004 when the Motorola Razr V3 was announced. This was not by any means the most, you know, the first flip phone, right? Flip phones were a thing, but
they were standard issue in North America, at least.
Right.
Candy bars were more popular in Europe, like the Nokias that everybody loves. We had flip phones everywhere, but they were all plasticky. They were thick. They were basically like a pebble in your pocket. And, you know, we kind of tolerated them for better or worse, right?
Right. And then the V3 comes out and it's beautiful. It's well made. It's satisfying. It introduced
so many new concepts. First of all, it was the first really thin phone. If you opened it up, it was thinner than 5 millimeters or something, or 5-ish millimeter thick. At the time, that was like unheard of, right? And then the other thing is it was made of metals and glass, like materials that you didn't see in phones at the time. I mean, there still was some plastic, like the chin and stuff, but the front cover was glass. The keyboard was made of this weird, like laser cut stainless steel, and the shell, I think, was aluminum. So, I mean, it was wow. Like, and the name Razr comes, for those of you who don't know this, comes from the fact that if you look at it especially with the chin open from like side profile, it looks like a razor blade that's just opened or closed, right?
Right. It looks like a straight edge razor. Exactly.
Correct. Yeah.
So fast forward 6 or 7 years, and Motorola tries this whole thing again.
Yeah.
And they come out with a new razor. In Canada, at least, it was just called the Motorola Razr. In the US, it was a Verizon exclusive called the Razr. Was it the Droid Razr?
Yeah.
And this was, you know, again, something kind of, it was ambitious, right? It was one of the first phones to use Kevlar. It kind of whittled down to a very thin point, trying to harken back to that Razr design. It was one of the first OLED displays. It was a Pentile OLED, which at the time was a little controversial. But it was not well received.
But it wasn't a folding phone. It was a very thin, premium looking Android phone, right?
Exactly. But it was shortly after the release of the Droid line, and it was meant to again give Motorola that brand bump. But this was a very different era, right? This was 2011, early days of Android. Motorola was still a big player. Fast forward to now, right? Motorola is barely in the conversation, especially when it comes to flagships. Yeah. So the Motorola Razr 2020, we're going to call that, yeah, it's a flip phone, but it's also a foldable phone. So when you saw this for the first time at the briefing on Tuesday, what were your initial impressions?
Well, so I saw the leaks first, right? Because I kind of knew what to expect. And you know, leaks, you know this, Daniel, this is more for your audience. Leaks are pretty much generally on point in our industry. So if you see a leak, you can pretty much, you know, we have some good leakers out there. I was like, wow, this is exactly what we saw. But like, I'm sitting in the presentation, I'm next to Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, and I'm like, at first, kind of like, yeah, whatever. You know, you have to understand, I've been doing phones since about 2005, actually, since the original Razr. And I, you know, you get jaded. You know, you get like, there's a lot of hype and marketing. And you know, this came out very strong on hype when they announced the event, the way they invited people, very few people and all that. So I was just kind of like rolling my eyes a little bit. But then the presentation really glued me in. I was like, wow, okay, so this is not just fluff. This is real. Like, in the sense that, it seemed like Moto really did some great design work. My background's engineering, and so I was looking at the engineering of this hinge and the display and how it all goes together, and they had some actual engineers up there talking to us about it and what their design choices were. I'm like, this is actually good. Like this, and me and Michael, like I kept like elbowing him and he elbowed me, and we're looking at each other going like nodding and going like, mm-hmm, holy crap, this might just be the first folding phone that doesn't suck, yeah, or doesn't fall apart when you use it because it of the design like, choices. Yeah.
It definitely felt like the, you know, everybody saw the leaks, as you said, but it felt like the expectations were exceeded, especially around the fact that the phone. So there has been a sort of trend over the last few months to associate foldable phones as delicate. I mean, the Galaxy Fold is the reason for that, but by and large, they're made of plastic. The screens themselves are made of plastic. Yeah. The hinges are mechanical, and therefore, while Samsung and Huawei have said that they are going to hold up after, you know, for hundreds of thousands of bends, the reality suggests otherwise. And we've seen teardowns by iFixit and, you know, jerry rig everything that have shown, yeah, Zach, just, yeah, how fragile these components actually are. And the bravado with which Motorola came out and said, this is a stainless steel phone. It's also a foldable phone, but you don't have to baby it. You don't have to worry about it falling apart. In fact, you can even get it wet and it's not going to just stop working.
Let's be clear here. First of all, this is what they claim, and what my experience touching the phone confirms that the engineering is sound, at least, and you know, we'll, you know, time will tell 6 months, a year from now. The water thing, I think the expectation is that they've done the best they could so water ingress won't happen in the hinge, and so that it's nano-coated. Like, Moto has this thing that I think it's proprietary to them, or maybe it isn't, and they make it sound like it is. But they have this nano coating on all their phones. And what it is the phone isn't actually truly water resistant. Like, water can get in, but everything's coated in this coating that repels water, meaning that a bit of moisture in there won't damage the phone. So that's what they're saying. So I think, in my opinion, if I'm going to pitch this to someone, I'm going to say this is a splash resistant phone, meaning you can use it in the rain as long as it's not pouring rain. You can use it, you can accidentally, like, you know, wet it real quick, and as long as you dry it up real fast, you'll be fine. You know, it's not, don't dunk it though. That's not gonna be good, right?
So the phone, the actual inside screen is a 6.2 inch plastic OLED display. When it's unfolded, it's a 21:9 aspect ratio. So it's skinny, it's tall. It's similar to an Xperia 1 or an Xperia 5.
Actually, an Xperia 5 is almost a dead ringer of it, because the Xperia 5 is 6.1 inches, 21:9.
Right.
And it's got a bit of bezel top and bottom. So it, you know, together, like, that adds up to what the chin would be on the Razr. So it's almost a match. I think for people who don't have these phones, because they're kind of rare, it's the width of a Pixel 4, non-XL, and a height of a Pixel 4 XL.
Okay, that's a good way of putting it. And yeah, and so it is just, you know, it opens up to being a regular size phone, 6.9 millimeters thin. So it is really thin, but when it's closed, it's half that size and it's 14 millimeters thick.
Yeah, so it's exactly the same thickness and height as the original Razr when closed. It's just a little wider.
Right.
That's basically, if you know the original Razr, that's what you have to picture in your head.
So think about this for a second. Who is this? And I'm not talking about even price, design, aspiration. I'm talking about Motorola said in its presentation that they are trying to appeal to the person that wants a big phone but has been yearning for a small phone. And we still have some small phones on the market. You know, when I was on your podcast a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Galaxy S10e and the, you know, all these other small,
Pixel 4. 4, iPhone 11 Pro, these are all considered today small phones.
Yeah, compact, right? They're not going to bulge out of your pocket even if you have, you know, tight pants or whatever. But Motorola is saying this is for the person that really wants to go back to the early days of phones where they were considerably smaller and get the best of both worlds. But I wonder, is that really a market for people anymore?
No, I think, look, what they're marketing is two things here. They're marketing nostalgia, first and foremost, right? Let's not kid ourselves. This is going to be wildly popular with people of a certain generation, right? People that remember the Razr as that phone that they bought when they finally had enough money to buy a really nice phone. It just happened to coincide that it was a really nice phone that came out. It was the first really nice phone in the sense that it felt like a luxury item. And it was priced as such back then. It was $400 on contract, or maybe it wasn't on. Yeah, I think it was 400 on contract, which is insane. And 400 today is like, back then was like 650 today, roughly, right? So it's not cheap for then. A lot of phones back then were like 199 on contract. And so it was considered a luxury item when it came out. And I think it attracted that kind of clientele. So I think this is going to be considered at $1,500 as a luxury item in a way. But it's still attainable because if you think about it, people spend $1,400 on an iPhone 11 Pro Max that's fully loaded right now, right? So, I mean, some people. So I think it's because it's not $2,500 or $2,000 or $4,000, whatever it is the Mate is going to cost, the Mate X, and the Galaxy is 2K, right? So
yeah.
If it's not, you know, it's 500 different, but it's still in that manageable, like maybe price point, number one. Number two, so it's going to be considered a luxury item. It's going to consider a nostalgia item and kind of a fashion, hip, cool thing to have because it's like the folding phone that doesn't suck, hopefully, like based on our evaluation so far of the mechanics and the folding design. So that I think is going to attract customer. But I think what's really going to attract customer, and again, this is very US centric. Now, for the audience, I'm Canadian, but I live in the US. I've lived here 28 years. And so I think this phone is going to primarily sell in the US because of two things. Verizon exclusive, which Verizon is a big network here and attracts a lot of people. And they're not technically savvy people. They don't really care about specs. They just want something cool. And the $1,500 price point is irrelevant because you can buy it for $60 a month on contract, roughly. And $60 a month on contract for some people is a lot of money. For a lot of people, that is nothing. Think about, you know, like the Bay Area, cost of living, right? $60 a month, trust me, you will spend $60 on food a day if you go out for one meal. No problem. So the kind of audience that can afford that is just going to not care and just buy that phone on contract. And I think that's why it's going to be popular, assuming it doesn't fall apart and there's no issues after the fact. But I don't see it appealing to young people. I don't see it appealing to people who are budget savvy, who are tech spec savvy or tech spec centric, like a lot of our audiences, my audience on my podcast, probably audience here at Android Central. And so, yeah, that's my take.
Okay, so yeah, it's expensive. I want to talk about the reason for that cost. So
let's talk about that hinge, because I think we really need to dig deep on what makes this hinge and this system different and better than the Fold. The things that kind of blew me away that I was nodding at Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher next to me, and realizing this event was actually worth being at and not fluff, and I had made the right decision to attend, was that, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. So maybe we can roll that in together?
Yeah, go for it. Talk about, I'm fascinated. I'm looking at a GIF on the Motorola website right now where they are showing, they're sort of deconstructing the hinge. And if you want to check that out, go for it, because it's really interesting. But what's so fascinating to you about that hinge?
So, I mean, the problem... So here, first you have to understand how folding displays work, right? So it's a plastic display that can bend. It can't really fold like you fold a piece of paper. It can bend. So if you take a sheet of paper out of your printer and you instead of folding it, you just bend it, right? Like you keep a curve where you normally would fold it by like running your finger, and you just make the two ends touch themselves and you have a teardrop shape, right? So that's how these folding, all the folding phones work. So it can't completely bend and have a crease in the display. It can only give you that teardrop shape, right? That's the only way the mechanism can work and should work. And that's how the phone has to basically fold, with the display being in that teardrop rounded shape inside of the fold. So the challenge there is that how much of that, like how small can that radius of that teardrop be before you actually put a crease in the display, right? So each manufacturer, each display for these, and we don't know who's manufacturing this display for Moto. I think it's BOE is my guess, but it could be LG, but it's definitely not Samsung. So there's only very few players in this. It could be Royole as well, because they manufacture displays. Anyway, the point is that they have to make a mechanism that fits around this folded up sheet display that has a teardrop shape. But so that when it's open, it's completely flat and well supported. And when it's closed, it's perfectly closed. And the inside of the hinge, the teardrop shape remains uncreased, undamaged. That's the challenge. So now the Fold does it in a different way than the Razr. The Fold does it by not fully closing where the hinge is. That's why there's a gap. So it's kind of like the Surface laptop? Book 1 and 2.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you shut it, there's a gap where the hinge is, but the ends touch, right? So that's what the Fold does. And of course, that means that stuff can get in that little hole in between. So that's the first difference. The way Moto did it, it's almost 100% flush. I mean, it's for all practical purposes flush. And that's a pretty interesting feat of engineering. Secondly, the mechanism feels way more rugged than the Fold to me. And it has that satisfying clickiness of open and closing. Now, it doesn't slap as much as a Razr did when it closed, but I think the reason they made it so that it doesn't slap as hard when you shut it is that so they don't have the two halves of the display collide against each other and damage each other, right? There needs to be some tolerance there.
Yeah.
So, but it still has that satisfying, like, click open, click close, and a bit of a spring loading. But what really surprised me the most is, and this is what Samsung has not achieved with the Fold, is that the display when fully open is 100% supported, meaning that you can touch any part of the display and is none of that squishiness. It's perfectly hard behind it. And that's very hard to do. And if you look at that GIF animation that hopefully you'll put in the show notes, you can see how there's these two plates right next to the hinge, left and right of it, that support the display when the phone is fully open, but retract inward to support that teardrop shape as the phone slowly closes.
You would think that those notches on the sides would get in the way of using the phone, but they don't.
Everything is very flush.
Yeah, they did a good job hiding the components, the gadgetry when the phone is open. And when it's closed, the gadgetry is kind of like it's on the side and you're not really paying attention because you can hold the entirety of the phone in your hand. Whereas you're not like when you have the phone open, right? You're supporting it with your back. And if you're right-hander like me, I'm trying to like describe it in a way that makes sense. Your thumb and the sort of like inside of your palm is resting on that right side, a little bit on the right side of the phone, but it's never uncomfortable. And I just want to say, like, they've been developing this for 4 years. And my guess is this design was locked in a long time ago, right? Yeah. Like, they had to get the design right. And they said that they had something like 28 prototypes before they managed to figure out this final one. But I'm guessing the iteration that it took to get a final design that was scalable was probably what kept it from being announced until now.
Right. And so in terms of the hinge, there's another thing that makes this completely different than the Fold and really unique and really what I think is going to be the killer feature and how everybody's going to emulate this on folding phones, right? Not just the fact that it closes perfectly tight, but that it actually, when you close it, the bottom half of the display, so the half that's in the chin part of the clamshell, slides into the chin by a millimeter or two. To keep that teardrop shape, so there's no pressure on the teardrop, it retracts into the chin by about a millimeter or two. And you can see that very slowly as you open and close it, the display actually moves back into place. What that means is that when the screen is fully open, it's in tension. It's being pulled tight. And that means that as a result, it feels tight to tap on when you're tapping on it or clicking on selecting things on display. But it also means that there's very little visible crease or like imperfection in the area that's the teardrop. That's the right. Fold, if you want. So that's a very unique engineering thing that they did there. And then finally, the thing that also impresses me, and I'm not sure this is true, but Sasha Segan of PC Mag told me this, and I believe them. I believe him because, you know, he's Sasha. Apparently there's a mechanism that brushes dust outwards to the edges of the hinge when the phone opens up so that nothing gets trapped under the display. There's some sort of brush that brushes stuff out of the way as the mechanism opens.
That makes sense. It's this, the sort of redundancy of maintenance, you know, long-term maintenance. It reminds me of how some smartwatches, they get water out of the speaker holes by using
vibrating it. Yeah,
vibration or using sound. It's a smart engineering achievement. And if you think about Motorola as a separate company from Lenovo, you're sort of not understanding the way that it operates within its parent today. Lenovo announced earlier this year its own foldable laptop. That product, which is still in prototype and hasn't officially been announced, it's been announced, but we don't know exactly when it's going to be released. That was made in step with this one, and there have been prototyping of foldable products within Lenovo since 2015, and it's taken this long for them to finally release their first product. Now, obviously, you say there are a lot of things in the design that keep the tolerances high, that keep it from feeling flimsy the way that the Fold occasionally does. But it is a smaller physical product.
Yeah, right? That's a little easier to do with a smaller product. We have to give Samsung the benefit of that the doubt on that is that it's harder to make a larger surface area because the hinge ultimately is has to be as thin-ish for the same teardrop kind of fold of the display, but on a much broader surface area, right? So having making it a narrow, like, folding it vertically instead of folding it in the square, like the Galaxy is probably easier to do. So, Samsung is trying something harder. But I think the takeaway for me from all this technical blah, blah, blah is that really this phone feels incredible. Like the mechanics of this phone is like you cannot understand this phone unless you touch it, you open it, you close it, you see how well made it is, how it feels, how the mechanics feel, the tactility of it. It's so much better than the Fold. The Fold is definitely premium. The materials are nice, glass, metal. It feels like it's well made. But as soon as you start moving the parts, you're like, oh, I'm going to have to treat this thing like a baby. You know how there are some machines out there that you can touch and you're like, ha, bulletproof. Like a power drill, right? Power drill, you can drop it. You don't care. It's going to hold up, right? But, like a beautiful, like expensive piece of machinery instead, like a phone, like you're going to treat that differently than a power drill, right? And it's kind of the same analogy here. It's like this thing feels like it could take a beating, basically. And it has this weird, amazing tactility to it that really totally got us all excited. Like every single journalist I know, everyone that was there, all the big players that I talked to, I did not have a single person roll their eyes and go like, oh yeah, whatever, Moto. Everyone is like, wow, this exceeded my expectation. This is better. This is different, right?
100%. And I will agree with you. The first time I picked it up it was a game-changing moment for me. I said, this is a product unlike... I mean, we were there during the Moto Z launch. We were impressed by the mods and the technology and the ambition behind it. But it really... That has never felt as cohesive an idea as this, even if this idea is steeped in nostalgia and it's not really a unique idea per se. It's taking older ideas and modernizing them in a way that I don't think any other company could do. Obviously, Samsung will come out with a clamshell foldable next year.
Yeah, they've already shown that it at their their developer conference.
You know, from a hardware perspective, this is way more than I think Motorola was capable of. And it's worth absolutely giving them props. However, you know, we've praised the product a lot.
Now let's talk about the negatives.
But there are a lot of potential things that, you know, potential concerns. And one is that the bill of materials just feels like they were finalized in early 2018, right? The Snapdragon 710 is nearly 2 years old, and it will be, I think, 2 years old when the phone is released in January. The single camera is still a very old sensor. It is
the same sensor as the OnePlus 6 and OnePlus 6T. And while you continue speaking, I'm actually going to Google that.
It is, yes. The IMX 519. It was used in the Moto G7 Plus earlier this year, the OnePlus 6 and 6T, and a bunch of Lenovo phones. And it's a capable sensor. It's 16 millimeters, 1.22 micron pixels. But Motorola has never been known for its camera prowess, and the fact that there's only one camera here, that the camera itself lacks OIS.
Well, there's two cameras.
Well, sort of. Yeah, you're right. Well, cameras.
So it lacks OIS is a big deal. It's an old sensor. It's not a horrible sensor, but it's an old sensor. It lacks OIS. At least the f-stop is 1.7. But knowing that Moto's software camera chops, like computational chops, are not there. I mean, look, the good news is that Snapdragon 710, we're going to see a Gcam port on this thing in 2 minutes. Like, I mean, literally, any Gcam that works on a OnePlus 6 will work on this phone pretty much out of the box. I can guarantee you that.
Right. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Mac Weldon. So, clothing basics. You don't really think a lot about them. Things like underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants. They're just kind of boring, except when Mack Weldon does them, because Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. I ordered a bunch of shirts and pants from Mack Weldon just a few weeks ago. They arrived beautifully packaged in just a couple of days, and I was absolutely thrilled with my unboxing experience. It's like unboxing a phone, except it's things you can wear, and they're way more comfortable than wearing a phone. If you are interested in trying Mack Weldon, they have a brand new line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, and all of Mack Weldon's products are incredibly comfortable. And if you aren't comfortable and you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will still refund you, no questions asked. Not only are they comfortable, though, they also perform well and they are really good for working out and going on dates and just being a part of everyday life. If you're interested in trying Mack Weldon, you can go to macweldon.com and enter promo code ACP for 20% off your first order. That's macweldon.com, macweldon.com, and enter promo code ACP at checkout for 20% off your first order. That is pretty great, and we, as always, are super grateful to Mack Weldon for sponsoring the show. You know, this is a phone with a 2510 milliamp hour battery. It's a small battery, and I understand that is a concern. Although the Snapdragon 710 was put in there apparently so that the phone would last longer, right? Because
the 730 is still more power efficient.
It's way more power efficient. It's built on a smaller, more efficient process. But that's what I mean. They finalized the specs almost two years ago. The display itself, it's pretty low resolution. It's basically 720p. It's like 876p. Not very sharp. And the external display is 800 by 600. And I want to talk a little bit about that quick view display, because unlike on the Galaxy Fold, which is able to use the regular Samsung UI or the regular Android UI, even though it's small. You cannot do that here. It's mainly for notification triage, replying to text messages, checking Google Assistant. And there's this selfie mode where you can kind of like open the camera quickly and take a photo of yourself. It's neat, but that front display, I don't think will be as useful as on other foldables.
Yeah, no, I think that specs are, you know, that's really the part. But I think that I don't think the audience cares, right? I think the audience that this is for is more of a mainstream audience, and it's more of a nostalgia audience, and it's more of a I have money and I'm going to spend it audience. So I think it's a perfect match for Verizon in the US market in many ways, and I think it's going to be super popular because of it. The spec folks are going to not like it, and the people who are more budget conscious obviously are not going to like it either, and the people who don't want to be on Verizon are not going to like it, or are going to like it but are not going to be able to get it. And if you get it unlocked by Verizon after 3 months of, you know, or once you pay it off and after 3 months of service, it's an eSIM only phone. It's the first phone in the world that doesn't have a SIM slot. And I know you're a big eSIM fan, Daniel, but I am not. And I think this is a problem because it means this phone is going to be a real pain in the ass to use on other networks, because there's a lot of networks out there that don't support eSIM yet. And I'm the big fan of the idea of a tiny piece of plastic that has your subscriber information on it, is connected to the network, that is completely dissociated from the terminal. eSIM breaks that, even though you're going to say, well, it's a software configurable SIM. It makes more sense in this day and age. I get all that. I'm an engineer. I love this stuff. I love the software. I would software all the things. But I think for SIMs, that breaks the whole concept of GSM and how a GSM was for. And I feel that it's the future. I know it's inevitable. It's like my headphone jack. I'm going to have to come to terms that it's going to go away. And speaking of, the Razer does not have a headphone jack, duh. But I don't like the fact that it's eSIM only. And it's really important that you know that, because if you get this phone somehow and you pay full price of Verizon, I don't think you'll be able to activate it on Bell or whatever. Because when you go to a store to do that, they're going to look at you and go, what are you talking about? And I doubt you'll be able to do it online, frankly.
Yeah, so I totally see that perspective. And I agree that right now an eSIM is largely a disadvantage. It's the anticipation of when it isn't that I find it interesting. For example, this advantages MVNOs by making it a level playing field. And we've seen that with Google Fi, the ability to activate it from, you know, any phone you don't, or any Pixel phone. You don't need to get a SIM card. You don't have to worry about going to a store. You don't have to talk to anybody. You just go online, you activate your phone service, and it works. Technically, this should allow for the same thing. If you get it unlocked, and it's, I checked Verizon, it's actually 60 days now, not 90. So,
oh, it's 60, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So if you buy this outright or you wait 60 days, the phone will automatically unlock, and then you get to port your number over to another provider, as long as that provider supports eSIM. Now, in the US, that's just AT&T and T-Mobile. It does not work on Sprint, which is fine because T-Mobile and Sprint are going to merge. But in Canada, that's all four major carriers. In most of Europe, eSIM is supported in some fashion by the big carriers, and all of the carriers in the EU talk to one another, which is great. And in many parts of Asia, that's true as well. So that is something that I'm excited about. I also just like the fact that Motorola and Verizon are using this phone, which is so fashion and engineering forward, as a pilot for eSIM in the US, something that even Apple was not willing to do, even though they did eSIM on the iPad Pro. So it feels to me like that Verizon is finally coming around to the idea of eSIM. And if Verizon does it, it means that AT&T and T-Mobile will follow suit.
Yeah, I hope so. Look, I get it, but I think that there's this magical thing that, and I know it's a very small audience use case, at least for us in the West, in Canada, in the US, in Europe. It's a very small use case because we tend to stay with the network we're with, and it's pretty easy to go to a store and get a new SIM or whatever. But I think that if you travel internationally as much as I do, there is an incredible satisfaction to be able to land at Hong Kong airport, walk into 7-Eleven, buy a SIM from a rack, pay for it, not being asked ID or anything, stick it in your phone, having unlimited data for a week.
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
And my point is, that's true. You can't emulate that in software, that experience. And I'm going to say, you're going to say, but it's inconvenient, Miriam. You have to go physically to a place. I get that. I get that. But to me, that's what makes GSM so magical. You have the terminal, the phone, and it's completely its own thing. And then you have the SIM. And the SIM is the network, basically. It's the physical representation of the network. You join the two together, and boom, magically it works. And that is a danger to be... Once you have that in software, that anonymity of buying a free SIM in cash at a, or not a free SIM, buying a SIM in cash at a store goes away. And that, you know, there's potential for issues and bugs and privacy and stuff that, you know, you're going to say privacy on a phone doesn't matter. And I agree with you because, I mean, as soon as you put the SIM in there, you're going to be tracked. But it's not, I'm not one of those people. I'm just saying that philosophically, there is an issue there with eSIM that I think nobody's really talking about, which is like we're kind of breaking GSM. Because if you think about it, CDMA back in the day, like Verizon and Sprint, when they only had CDMA networks, they had no SIMs because basically they did eSIM, right? Like
right.
They provisioned the phone with software to go on the network, right? Like
if there is a an infrastructure that supports eSIM, for instance, right now eSIMs are transferred using QR codes. And there is no central provisioner for these QR codes. So there's no, the carriers are not working with a centralized body the way that they do the GSMA that issues or maintains the fundamental strength or structure of these QR codes to make every eSIM compatible phone interoperable. That is what my dream is. So that if you touch down in Hong Kong, you open an app that is decentralized and not controlled by any one carrier or country, and you get a list of carriers and their plans that are supported in that area. You tap one because that's the one that's most convenient to you. You press buy, you enter your credit card information, and all of a sudden, magically, you have that service on your phone. You never had to go to a store or deal with any physical SIM cards. That is the future of eSIM that I'm excited about, but it's not even close to being here yet. And this is just one inconvenient step in towards that future of massive convenience.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I didn't want to derail this conversation to eSIM.
I think it's important to talk about. I do want to talk a little bit about, though, we were talking about software. This is going to ship with Android 9 Pie. And I find that to be incredibly problematic. Especially because it's coming in early 2020.
Actually, it's in perfect harmony with the 710.
Right, exactly. But let's talk a bit about that because, you know, foldable software is not easy, right? Motorola, like Samsung and Huawei, have to figure out how to make one screen turn into another. Are you okay with the fact that this is launching with Pi, or is it a problem
no.
for you?
It's a problem for me. It's ridiculous. I'm going to have a hard stance on this, and I have with the carriers and the manufacturers forever now, is that you need to if you launch a phone within a month to 3 months of a new version of Android coming out, so basically within 3 months of Google I/O, I'm willing to give you a pass on running the old version, but 3 months later, if you don't have a phone that launches with the new version, you're doing it wrong. And I think as journalists, we should hold them accountable to that. So yeah, this is a miss. This is wrong. They should have dealt with this a long time ago. They've had 9 months almost, well, whatever it is, 7 months to deal with this. They have no reason. They have no excuse. I mean, I say 7 months publicly. They probably had access to betas of Android. Queue for how long now? I don't know, probably a year.
Yeah, a long ass time and something, you know, I agree that it's not okay. Especially because look, most people won't be coming from a phone that ran Android 10, but Motorola's One Nav gestures are garbage compared to what's native on Android 10 now. Not to mention the fact that like it just feels clunky. There's a whole lot of stuff around Android 9 that has been improved in Android 10. And Motorola said that it's working with Google to optimize the software for Android 10 and that it'll launch shortly after the phone comes out. But that'll be in January of 2020. And we may not get the update until, you know, late Q1, which could be March, right? March of 2020. That's not okay.
No.
What else? We're talking about... this phone as this sort of object of aspiration. The phone comes with this really, really nice package. And I think, you know, we don't usually talk packaging, but it's kind of interesting that Motorola, like Samsung, is really going for this unboxing experience. What you're getting for your $1,500 is not just a phone, it's an experience. Tell us about the packaging, because I think it was on display at the briefing that we were at.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I think at this price point, you kind of expect something a little special on that end, right? So the package is such that it's like a rectangular vertical like portrait box, and you open it and the phone is sitting kind of diagonally in the box and at an angle kind of presented to you as if it was on a stand. You know, the Pixel stand, basically, imagine it's that, but black and not round. Instead, it's kind of more squarish, and the chin of the phone rests on that. But inside of that little stand is kind of like an acoustic chamber to amplify the speaker in the phone. So you can use it as a speaker stand. It is kind of cool. It's the packaging looks like it's sturdy and well-made enough that you might not want to dispose of all of it. At least not that stand part. And it comes in the box with, I think a 15 watt charger, even though technically I'm pretty sure the phone can handle 18 watt charging because turbo power maxes out at 18 watt. It has a pair of earbuds from Bang & Olufsen, I think is the brand. I could be wrong. Double check on that. Oh, Denon. Thank you. So it's got a pair of Denon earbuds, and it has a headphone adapter, which is nice, 3.5 millimeter. Again, I expect that when you spend $1,500, since there's no headphone jack. So it's a nice little package. I think there's I didn't unbox it, so I don't know if there's manuals or something. I'm sure there is something there. No SIM removal tool, since we talked about that at length. And of course, there's no micro SD on this phone, so there's not going to be any way to open it up to put something in there.
Right, no expansion.
So, yeah, it comes with 6 gigs of RAM, talking of like middling specs, and 128 gigs of storage. I think the storage number is fine, I think. It's definitely, at least not 64 like Google. Who does that nowadays?
Honestly,
64 on flagship.
Apple too,
seriously? But... oh, I guess Apple. Yeah, but Apple, at least $699 for the entry price, you know, like.
Well, it's
and you pay
still on the iPhone 11 Pro, isn't it? Also 64 standard.
Yeah, but I mean, that's Apple for you. Oh my God, my Google is talking to me. Sorry. See, that's what happens when you talk about Google; it just wakes
right.
up. So I think, look, it's going to be interesting. Another negative, it depends how you look at it. But obviously, this phone is going to be available in other markets. There was a lot of South American media when we were there, South and Latin America. So obviously, Moto has a big presence there, and they're probably hoping that it becomes kind of a blingy product for that market. So it's going to be available and locked in Europe, Asia, and South America, Latin America. And obviously, you know, when I say Asia, I'm very general here. You know, I mean, I know I shouldn't. I'm including India in that. I'm including Indonesia and Malaysia and Philippines and, you know, Vietnam, all these wonderful countries in the East. So I'm thinking we're going to see this phone in many variations. However, we might see a variation of this phone with a SIM slot in some markets. I wouldn't be surprised. Like to sell this in Latin America, like, how are you going to do that without a SIM card? I don't see them adopting eSIM anytime soon. So there's got to be a variant of this phone with a SIM slot. I think the reason they made it with an eSIM, specifically what we saw, was for Verizon, for the US, to kind of lock it into Verizon even more, in my opinion, because people are not going to know what to do if they ever want to buy this phone. Like, maybe that's going to be an article for Android Central. You know, how to port your Moto Razr that you spend $1,500 for at Verizon onto another network.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be enough interest in that, at least for a while. But I do want to talk a little bit about Verizon just, you know, before we end, because this is really, like, Verizon did not pick up the second Fold, right? This was, the original Fold was going to come to all four U.S. carriers, I believe. And then the second version, once it tanked, ended up only at AT&T.
I'm surprised AT&T picked it up even.
Well, AT&T picks up random crap like the ZTE Axon M and stuff. Like they just do random wacky one-off phones.
Yeah, the Axon M.
You know,
I recently had shades of that again by using the LG G8X ThinQ dual screen.
Yeah.
A mouthful that
but
is.
You have to say the full name every time you say it. It's like Beetlejuice.
LG G8X ThinQ full. No, LG GA Thin Q dual screen. I said it right the first time.
So yeah, you get like a shock every time you say it wrong. So Verizon obviously has a long-standing relationship with Motorola. It's still going strong with the Moto Z4 and the 5G mod and the all that side of things. Clearly, this isn't a 5G phone, and we're not going to really talk about that because clearly the battery wouldn't support it.
Yeah, I think we're going to see another Razr with 5G. If this takes off and it's successful, and we're going to see start shipping cheaper version, you know, because the Razr lineup of the V3, like, it proliferated into madness. In fact, I think that Moto kind of killed itself, shot itself in the foot many ways by just relying on the Razr for way too long, even when the iPhone was out. Like, come on. You know, so I guarantee you we'll see all kinds of variants on this phone, including a 5G one, and with much better specs very soon, if this is successful.
Oh, I think it'll be successful insofar as they're only going to make a few thousand units, and they're guaranteed to sell out of that initial allotment. What I'm curious about is, you know, Verizon and all the US carriers, especially now that T-Mobile and Sprint are going to merge, Verizon is, it's pushing content pretty hard, same as AT&T. Verizon doesn't have the same in-house content machine, right? They own Yahoo and all that, but like they don't own HBO. They sure don't. And Go90 is not exactly a good competitor there. They are offering a year of Disney Plus for free for all unlimited subscribers, and you can be damn sure that every single Razr is going to come preloaded with a Disney Plus app on it. But
I mean, it was already full of crapware when we played with it.
Exactly. But I just find it interesting.
The Verizon messaging app. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. The less we talk about the CCMI and all that, the better. But I just want to talk to you a little bit about Verizon as a company, right? Why is this such an important product for them? And is this just another way that they're showing their 5G, you know, the people that are interested in like the latest and greatest, that they're still investing in that? Or is there some other reason that they're picking this up as an exclusive?
Oh, they're picking this up because they've been in bed with Moto forever. I mean, Moto and Verizon are like BFFs. Like, they've been up on a tree making out forever now. Like, they're married. This is a relationship. And they haven't had any good stuff from Moto in a while. So this is really good stuff. I mean, you know, yeah, the specs are middling and it doesn't have 5G, but that doesn't matter today. That only matters to us, the tech savvy early adopter nerds, right? Like, I mean, I think this product is going to be way more successful than a few thousand units. I think that unless something really goes wrong with that hinge that we just described at length, I mean, the chin itself, this thing has the same chin as the original. In the chin, there's a USB Type-C port, there's a fingerprint reader, there's a little speaker and vibration motor. The antennas are in there. It's even made of that same resin plastic that kind of coats the back of the phone. It's like this nostalgia central. This thing is going to sell like freaking hotcakes because $60 a month on Verizon. I think we're going to see a really successful rollout. And I might completely be completely wrong, because I was completely wrong about the iPhone 5C, because I thought that it was going to be super popular because of the colors, and it bombed. So, you know, I don't always get it right, but I'm feeling very strongly about this.
No,
because I think it just hits a lot of sweet spots, and nostalgia is you cannot underestimate nostalgia. And I think North America is just in a state right now, especially, you know, I don't want to get political and stuff, but I'm just saying, like, we live in a time right now where things are hard for people. And if they can wrap themselves around something that is modern and brings them joy today, like a smartphone that reminds them of the good old days, like the Razr V3, they're going to do it. They're going to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we'll leave it there, because that's a really, really good and poignant way to end it. thank you so much, Miriam. If people want to find you on the internet, where can they do that?
Yeah, so I'm in many places. My handle on Twitter and Instagram is Tankgirl, like the comic book character without the vowels. That's TNKGRL. If you want to like chit chat with me about this podcast, talk to me on Twitter. And then Instagram has a lot of pretty photos of phones and taken with phones, so check that out as well. Most importantly, I have a podcast called the Mobile Tech Podcast. It's at mobiletechpodcast.com. There's an RSS feed there. You can subscribe that way. But also, I'm on all the big platforms like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Overcast, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, everywhere. So please subscribe. Please rate the podcast. Please write a review on whatever platform I'm using. If you like the show, it's kind of like that, but a bit longer and maybe a little nerdier. I always have a lot of guests. I've had Daniel recently. It's generally media guests. And then to go with the podcast, there's a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Miriam Jouar. The cool thing about this YouTube is that it's just like visual content to go with the podcast. So Miriam Jouar is my full name. You can find that on Twitter, youtube.com/Miriam Jouar. Please subscribe to the channel, like the videos, all that good stuff. Tell your friends about all of this. I also want to plug really quickly that I'm doing a collaboration podcast with someone else right now. It's a kind of a short run of a few episodes called How to CEO. And the URL for that is murraynewlands.com/CEO. So let me read that out for you. It's Murraynewlands.com/CEO. Murray is my partner in this. He is a pretty cool Silicon Valley dude. And we talk about CEOs and the mistakes they make and the mistakes they don't make and the cool things they do and the cool things they don't do. We've covered about like the Huawei ban. We've talked about Facebook and privacy, all this kind of stuff. So it's a really interesting show. And to entice you, we're actually giving away some earbuds. We're giving away AirPods Pro. So I strongly suggest you go to that URL, get your AirPods Pro, and listen to the show. But that's where you can find me.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. And we will have links to all of those in the show notes at Android Central. My name is Daniel Bader. I'm once again hitting my microphone. I'm sorry about that. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback about the Motorola Razr, send us an email to podcast@Android Central. What I do want to say is everybody who sent in your drinks, your favorite drinks, thank you so much. We got some ridiculous submissions, and no, I will not be drinking some of those whiskey shot recommendations. I like to sip my whiskey, folks. But good luck with that. All right, until next time, thanks so much for listening. Miriam, it was a pleasure. And
thanks for having me.
We will talk to you again soon.
That was really nice.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.